This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 147. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and an incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com and be sure to enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Harmer, and today I am joined by Nick Page and Darren Meller. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Hey, well, we are excited because we are shooting in Zion National Park this week with a bunch of readers of Improved Photography. We announced this trip a long, long time ago, and it filled up like in hours. We had 75 people signed up to come. I think we're coming from 15 different states and a few different countries we have people coming from. So really exciting to be able to just be with a bunch of you guys and shooting together. That's kind of what this is all about. So it's a fun week for us, but we are getting into the photography stuff today. We have a lot to talk about. Nick tried out a 70 Mark II, that's old news. Nick tried out a Sony A7R II that is kind of the hot camera that everybody's talking about right now. So Nick, I think we got to throw this one over to you first. What'd you think? What's the knee-jerk reaction to the Sony A7R II?
Well, first,
I'm sorry. We got to start it with the beginners in mind. Tell us what the camera is for the uninitiated, and then for everybody else that's a geek like us, tell us all the cool stuff.
All right. So the A7R II is kind of Sony's full frame flagship camera. It's the one that so many landscape photographers and astrophotographers have been drooling over. It's like 46 megapixels, 42 megapixels. It's a high megapixel sensor. It's full frame. It's mirrorless, which means that you get the full frame sensor in a much smaller body. The A7R IIs are really kind of it's a first of its kind. So I went out and I got to shoot with Majid and Zach Blackwood this weekend. We went and we're chasing fall color and going to waterfalls and stuff. And Zach has an A7R II, so I got to play with it a little bit. He had the Metabones adapter, which meant I got to use my Canon lens on it. The first thing I realized is that it is not a Canon because I felt so stupid when I went to like use it. The menu systems are just way different. Everything's in a
different
place.
That's how I feel every time I pick up somebody else's speed light. Like if it's not a Yongnuo, it's like, I can't use this thing.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than sitting down to help somebody with their camera and then you feel just as completely dumb holding this thing and you can't find anything. Like,
isn't it the worst when you're teaching a workshop and somebody has like a Canon Rebel and they're like, hey, Jim, how do I change the aperture? And you're like,
right. For me, that's how I
and
feel.
And they look at you like,
That's how I feel when I pick up like an entry level Nikon. It seems like everything's in the menu, and I hate that. But the Sony camera, the images that come out of it are awesome. I haven't actually got a chance to see the ones that I shot, but I've seen the ones that Zach have posted, and really a sharp combination with the lenses he has. He has the 16-35 from Sony, the Zeiss
the
lens.
F4.
It feels great in the hand. It's much smaller than what I'm used to. It's considerably lighter than what I'm used to. There's definitely a learning curve if you're coming from Canon to pick up a Sony because everything is just so different. The buttons, the dials, the menus, it's all different. So it's going to take more than a few minutes for me to know how I feel about it, I guess.
And so what would it take to get you to switch?
It would take me not shooting sports or birds or weddings anymore because I did play around a little bit with the autofocus. It's not the fastest focusing thing in the world. And it didn't seem, even when it's locked down on a tripod, it didn't seem to be the most accurately focusing thing in the world, at least with the Metabones adapter. I have another friend that shoots the Sony A7, the original, and or the A7R, and the, he experiences the same thing. Like, he is just not content with the autofocus, and he's a landscape photographer, and he said that you have to manually focus it in order to get consistent results with it. So I just shoot too many things other than landscape photography. I can't really justify anything that has a less than awesome focusing system in it.
So well, would cool. you say that it has its $3,000 price tag for someone who's in that landscape photographer realm?
I would say yes, maybe.
Okay.
You know, if just the quality of the image and the megapixels, if that those are some of the most important things to you, that or like a one of those D810. Cameras, yeah, D810, those are probably what I would point them towards, just because it's awesome if you're a landscape photographer or a commercial photographer and the focus isn't quite as crucial. If that's all you need, it's awesome. But there's just so many other cameras that are more affordable that have better focusing that right now, like, I couldn't justify it.
Yeah. And I honestly, hopefully I'm not the only one, and Nick's not the only one out there besides me who thinks that the focus system or the menu system to get in there to mess with things is really dorky. So it is real hard to shift in between Canon and Sony.
Yeah. And you didn't really have to go into the menu for most things. Like, you can change your exposure triangle, all from buttons and dials and stuff. It's just, there's a learning curve. You got to learn where it is. It would take me a good solid month of using it before I could use it in the dark. That's for sure.
Hmm. Well, I it's an exciting camera. It's one that I have considered buying. I have a project coming up that I'm going to need a lot more resolution than what the Fuji can do, a print project. And so I've considered renting one for the project. But I don't know. I don't know if it's time yet for me to look at Sony. I'm loving shooting my Fuji, but when I do need a higher resolution, I don't know if I want to just stick with the safe Nikon system that I know, or if I want to try out the Sony. But definitely an interesting camera.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, speaking of new gear, this week I got in the mail a 50-pound box of photo gear. That's a good day, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good day. The nicest thing is the whole box only cost me $50. It was this deal that I had posted on Improved Photography. If you missed it, you should be spending more time on improvephotography.com. We got good stuff there. It is the Canon PIXMA Pro 100 printer. So B&H had this awesome deal that they would give you money off, and then you can get a rebate, and it ends up that you get this $400 Canon PIXMA Pro 100 printer for $50, and they even throw in 50 13x19 luster papers. So I mean, awesome deal. And so I picked it up, and it came this week. And so I've been playing around a ton with this printer. I spent like 2 full working days working on this, and I have a review going up on Improved Photography this just in the next day or two. So first of all, the black and whites are what I'm most excited about with this printer. It uses dye inks rather than pigment, and the advantage of the dye inks are they can get really dark and really saturated, but they have the potential drawback of not lasting as long. But, I mean, Canon's advertising 100 years on this ink, which I always think, like, you know, they started using this ink 2 years ago. How do they know it's going to last 100, right? Like, I mean, they know kind of what's in the chemicals and stuff. But you know, when we get that long, what they basically mean is everybody's going to be dead before the print goes bad, right? Okay. So I like the dye inks because it does a very good job with the black and whites. I printed a couple black and white pictures that I thought, we're okay. And I saw them in paper and I just wanted to cry. I mean, it was so beautiful. Really, really liked that. I like that it prints up to 13x19. Sorry, international listeners. I hate it when I use the, you know, US measurements. That is A3 plus paper. So it's a pretty nice page, and it can print borderless, which is even nicer. I also like that it's wireless. You can print without being connected with a cord, but there are 2 caveats to that. One is the printer can't get firmware updates just over Wi-Fi. It has to connect to the computer. So periodically, you got to connect it to make sure it's getting updates. And it does do AirPrint, so you can use, you know, just print from your iPhone up to your printer wirelessly, but you can only do up to 5x7, which I don't know what that is in international speak, but it's postcard size, right? So that's a little bit of a limitation, but how big are you really going to print on your iPhone anyway?
Yeah.
The inks now, this is the question. How expensive is it going to be for me to print? Well, the answer is it's expensive, but I haven't run out the inks yet, but judging by how many that I have printed, I've printed quite a lot, and where the little utility says my ink levels are, my best guess is that you can print about 35, you know, full-size A3 plus prints, 13x19 prints, before you're out of ink. Ink costs about $100 to get all eight ink cartridges replaced. But actually, if you price that out compared to Nation's Photo Lab or wherever it is you print, it's actually a little bit cheaper, actually significantly cheaper per print. But then we got to make up the price of the printer, but the printer was only $50. Anyway, you get the idea. It's a little bit cheaper to print from home, but you got to deal with a lot more if you're handling the printer too. Getting it calibrated, making sure everything's done right. Whereas when you do it from an online lab, like, it's just done for you. Now, comparing the prints from this printer to what I get from ProDPI, which I really like, I'm really putting it right on par. It was more difficult to get this printer calibrated, whereas when I print it from ProDPI, all I got to do is calibrate my monitor, and I know that print is coming back perfect every time. This took some tweaking to get there, but I watched tutorial after tutorial and finally figured out exactly what you have to do. And now that I have it dialed in, I can print, no questions asked. I know it's going to turn out right. And so I'm really happy with the printer. Actually, I'm really happy with the printer. Like, I love the printer. I haven't done a whole lot of printing from home before. And so it's kind of been an exciting thing for me. Like, I'm going through all my photos and I'm like, print. My wife walked into the office this week and saw prints just everywhere, covering the whole floor. And she's like, what are you going to do with all those? Where are you going to put them? And I was like, nuts.
I don't know.
I was just having a good time, right? Anyway, so it's exciting. If you got the printer on the deal, which I hope you did because it's great, then definitely check out the full review. I have a video there where I'll walk you through how to calibrate the printer in a lot more details. And if you didn't get the printer, watch the review anyway, because it may be one you want to look at picking up. That's so pretty cool.
That's awesome. So what different kinds of medium can you print on with this? Are you pretty much just limited to like fine art paper, glossy paper, matte paper?
Yeah, it's paper.
Okay.
You can't do canvas or anything. Well, you can do a canvas paper, you know, that just has the little texture like of canvas, but it's paper.
Yeah.
But no, it's paper. You're printing paper. Well, you can print on a CD cover as well, which I guess is useful for wedding photographers who want to, you know, print directly onto a DVD. But then again, your clients probably don't have a DVD drive, so don't look like, don't look like you're stuck in the last century. it's pretty cool though.
And we are winning. We have Jim back on the Canon side of things. So woohoo!
Yeah, actually, I do love Nikon and I love Fuji, but I have two Canon printers here, and right across the desk from me is a Canon video camera. Whenever you watch improved photography videos, it's shot on a Canon. I use lots of Canon stuff too.
Nice.
All right. Well, that does it for my segment and Nick's, but we have a lots more to talk about in this episode. But before we get to that, we want to take a second and thank two companies that have helped to make the Improved Photography Podcast possible. The first is Harry's. This is a product that Nick Page has never used and will never ever use, because Nick has a serious beard going on. If you haven't seen the YouTube videos of Nick's, how Nick, give us a length here. How long is that beard you got going?
You know, like if I grab it and I just kind of pull it up, like it easily reaches my receding hairline. So, I'm willing to say it's like 9 inches, something like that. And
all right, so
it depends on whether I brushed it that day or not. Like on, okay. If it's freshly brushed, it's easily 9 inches, I would say. Maybe 10.
Nice, which is, you know, which is, what is that in metric
like a,
speak?
Like a quarter of a meter, maybe? Like,
okay, yes, yeah, so it's big. It's big. Yeah. He's got a big beard, which is great as Nick is celebrating the month of Movember. Actually, he does that every month, which is the month where men grow a mustache to bring awareness to men's health issues. And so I think it's a pretty cool thing. I don't know if I can be persuaded to participate this year. I think I might look ridiculous. I think I start getting Yosemite Sam like within days. I start to get that Yosemite Sam look. But either way, even Nick Page must groom the beard. And for that, Harry's really is an excellent product. So do me a favor, the next time you go to the store and you're fixing to spend $30 on just the blades for your razor, go to harrys.com with our coupon code IMPROVE. You can get your starter set for just $10. That'll get you your starter set. Their blades are cheaper, made in their warehouse in Germany. I mean, these people are passionate about savings for their customers and really produce an excellent company. And we always want to highlight companies that are doing it right on the Improved Photography Podcast. So be sure to go to harrys.com. That's harrys.com and enter offer code IMPROVE. And that will give you $5 off your first order. And we thank them for their support of Improved Photography. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the product that all three of us use for our photography portfolios. And I used Squarespace long before they were an advertiser on the Improved Photography Podcast because it's something that I can just completely remove from my business. I don't have to worry about my portfolio being up there, updating it, looking great, having a good design. And the other nice thing is you don't end up drowning in expenses. Squarespace is really reasonably priced. Starting at just $8 a month, you can get started with Squarespace. And you can even just try it. I mean, go to squarespace.com and at least try Squarespace. If you enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout, you'll get 10% off. We use it for our photography portfolios, but you can really use Squarespace to do just about anything online. You want to start a blog? You want to start a website? An online store? Want to sell your photography? Squarespace is an excellent idea. So if you have a small business, if you're a photographer, which I hope you are if you're listening to this, Squarespace really is an excellent solution for your website. So check it out at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. And we thank Squarespace. They've been the longest running supporter of Improved Photography, and we definitely have noticed it. All right, we have lots more to talk about. Darren, what do you have for us in your 5-minute segment?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be able to shoot my first commercial automotive shoot this weekend.
Ooh, and that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It actually
entailed. So how'd you get the gig? Start from square one.
Well, it comes down to your friends knowing that you're photographers. And I had my friend who I traded snow tires for, and we laughed about that last time, who designed my website. He got a gig where he was redesigning someone else's website. And he noticed when he was evaluating the website for a friend that owns a limo company, that every limo company out there kind of misleads their clients. Like, you rent a limo, whether it's for corporate, a wedding, etc., and you're getting a stock photo from a stock photography website. You're getting a photo from the limo manufacturer company's website, whether it be Chrysler, Mercedes, etc. And he decided he wanted completely better photos that he could take and put on this website. So he thought, well, I know a photographer and I know someone who wants to get into commercial photography. So he gave me a ring and said, hey, it's not going to be paying you probably what you'd be asking for a wedding or any other type of shoot that you like, but we can definitely get a release signed so you can put this on your website to show you're doing commercial work. And thus, after shooting this weekend, I came up with 3 rough things that I wanted to talk about to be successful in a commercial shoot, especially when it's involving automotive. And there's many types of commercial shoots you can do out there. And this is probably more automotive centric, but I did try to keep it generalized just so it's not specific just to cars, because you could be shooting food, models, you name it.
So did you have a model in the photo, or is it just the car itself?
Just the car itself. We did try to get a model, and I put a call out there to see if we could have, you know, a woman's leg in a cocktail dress, you know, like she's stepping out with a chauffeur's hand, wearing a glove in a suit, but that we didn't have the time for that budgeted in. So maybe next time. And then also they want to do some night photography shots of the car. So I did suggest getting a model to get in and out of the car, and then also to have the chauffeur in his full attire.
Oh, very cool. So did you do any lighting with the shoot?
Yeah, we brought the light stick, the do it yourself light stick the gym has on Proof Photography that you can make for under $50 with three young Nuo flashes strapped to it with a shoot through umbrella. We used that for a lot of interiors, and we also took some bare speed lights, and then also did some other diffusing to place them around the interiors of large party buses, or even this huge trolley that they have with a stationary bucking saddle, I guess, is to where if they hit a speed bump really fast, it bucks you around like you're on a real bull.
Okay, so walk me through step one. Pretend I'm an idiot. I've never touched the camera before. What kind of camera settings did you go to first? Where did you place each of the flashes? How'd you know what power to put on the flashes? Everything like that.
Okay. Well, for exteriors, that's the tricky part. You need to evaluate whether or not you can go somewhere in harsh sunlight, the shade, or you can just shoot natural light with it. You're probably better off using natural light when it comes to exteriors, or using what they call a strip box, and which is just a really long, skinny box with a diffuser that you can hook to some flashes, or just going bare flash and keeping the flashes relatively far away on a lower power. Positioning on the outside, you want to make sure that you're walking around, doing some test shots after you fire a couple, and looking at the frame pixel by pixel to see whether or not there's any reflections, because your speed light can be reflected in the shot, you could be reflected in the shot, or a lighting modifier could be reflected in the shot. And after taking an umbrella off of a Harley Davidson gas tank once in an engagement shoot, I vow to never have any reflections that were unwanted in my photos again.
Okay.
And then for interior shots, those ones we just did long exposures. We figured we were fortunate to have the Canon 6D, which has Wi-Fi set up, and you could also use a cam ranger like Nick uses to shoot wirelessly as well. But if you shut the limo off and just have it run on battery power where it's all lit up, where they have whatever lighting scheme going on there, a TV with a fireplace going on in the background, you can just use the EOS app with the Canon 6D or 7D Mark II, I believe, has the wireless in it as well. And then you can fire from the exterior of the car, or hook a cam ranger up to it and fire that on almost any camera that's supported by the cam ranger. And it allows you to do a longer exposure without, you know, jostling around in the car, because when that long exposure is open, any movement's going to blur out the tiniest detail that they're looking for on the site, because they wanted high resolution images.
Okay, very cool.
Yep, and pretty much the three things I wanted to share with you: keep the dialogue open with the client who's actually hiring your designer. Talk to your designer as far as figuring out what they want for their vision. Make sure you're all on the same page. Be prepared for anything. I brought a ladder. They thought, oh, it'd be so cool if you guys had a ladder with you. We had it. It really surprised and delighted them. We actually made sure we had a full tank of gas, which is something I usually sometimes forget. And we drove next to this limo bus and car to freeze out the action of their limousine brand and their license plate with their limousine company name on there. And then also, like I said, with the tripod and the shutter release inside the car worked out is really well. And last but not least, know what gear you need, because you don't really have time to keep making frequent trips to your vehicle, your gear bag, etc. Because I was being paid by the hour, and we only had a certain amount of budgeted hours we could actually get the shot done. So really a lot of fun, huge learning experience. And I would say keep the flash power low as a general rule, because you can always turn it up and it's really hard to remove those darn reflections.
Well, good. Sounds like it was a successful shoot.
Yeah, they loved it. And I was really happy, and we get to do another shoot for them, like I said, for night photography. So I'm really excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, in every episode, we want to share a doodad of the week with you, something that we have found and are excited about. And Darren, well, you're already gone. Tell us what your doodad is for this week.
Well, we have some rain in the forecast here in the fall season, and I always like to be prepared. I was in shooting this summer, and we bought some of these in Oregon when we went out there for that photo shoot, and they're the OptiTech USA rain sleeves. They're really inexpensive. They look like a trash bag that goes over your camera. They're clear, but they will protect your camera and they'll allow you to continue shooting while it rains. If you're in an area where you're starting to get some tropical storms that have lightning or anything like that, and you don't want to go inside right away because you think you can get a couple last minute shots, it's handy to throw one of these on your camera. Usually they're one time use and it enables you to stay out there longer and continue to shoot. So I'd always recommend having some type of rain sleeve in your camera bag.
Great. Well, that's definitely one that I use. I like having those little lightweight ones because they're just, well, lightweight and you don't have to worry about messing them up. They just are tiny, fit in the bag easily. Mm-hmm. Very good. And I'm going to be using those in Zion National Park this week because there's a lot of rain, like when you're in the Narrows and stuff, a lot of waterfalls and stuff like that. So nice to have around. Nick, what do you have?
So I actually have three different ebooks. I did a lot of reading when I went to Detroit this last week. And the first one that I have is Making the Image by David Duchemin. I hope I'm saying his last name right. But it's a really a great book. It basically, it's just a list of questions to ask yourself every time you sit down to make an image. And it's amazing the amount of difference it makes when you ask yourself these basic questions. The questions like, why do I want to take this photo in the first place? What are the lines doing? Where's the contrast? What's the subject? You know, and just by going through a list of questions to ask yourself, you end up seeing the scene in a different way. It was a really great book. You can find that at craftandvision.com. And while I was shopping there, I came across two that will probably be of interest to our listeners. I picked up The Ultimate Guide to Photographing Zion National Park and The Ultimate Guide to Photographing Arches National Park. On my way down to Zion, I'm going to be stopping at Arches for a couple days. And so I grabbed these books, and it's great because it gives you a list of places that look awesome in the morning, places that look awesome at night, how long the hike is there, recommendations for gear to take, blah, 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 blah. Really cool books. Check them out. They're all at craftandvision.com.
Very cool. Well, I've kind of already tipped my hand of recommending the Canon Pixmo Pro 100 printer for this week, which I really was quite happy with. It's a very, very nice printer. But I also want to mention a resource that we have on improved photography. We haven't talked about it in quite a while. And it's probably the coolest thing that we... one of the coolest thing we do. The coolest thing we do is the Lightroom Steel. That's the one that we get the very best feedback on each year. And that's coming up right at the end of November on Black Friday. I have been putting in, a lot of time already this year, putting together those presets each year in a big package. We put together a whole bunch of resources for you and blow it out for $39 on Black Friday. The package sells for over $400 all the rest of the time. Well, anyway, one of the other things that we get great feedback on, though, is our portfolio reviews. You know, I talk to photographers all the time who are just looking for an honest review of their work so they can kind of see where they want to go, see what things they're doing well and kind of what things to focus on. And, you know, there are only a few of us. We can't, you know, give feedback on everybody's photos, but we did create this portfolio review service. So if you want to get feedback specifically from one of us, you know, you want Jim Harmer to look at your photos, you want Nick Page to look at your photos, or you want Darren Miller to look at your photos and, you know, look through each of your photos, give you some feedback. What we do is you send us 7 or 14 photos, depending on which portfolio review you get. And then we record about 10 minutes. Usually it's longer than that. Podcast just for you, and we'll walk through all the photos, you know, tell you on each one kind of the things that we like and don't like and that can be changed. And then we talk about overall kind of where you fit in as a photographer and some of the things that we would work on in your situation. Really is pretty cool. Nobody else is offering anything like this online. It's only $39 to get your portfolio review. And it's a cool way if you want, you know, direct feedback from us, you can get it. I don't know what else you could do to improve your photography faster than to get a portfolio review. And we offer it right on Improve Photography. Just look in the sidebar. There's a big button there for get feedback on your photos. It's just $39. There are several packages you can choose from, but really for $39, it's a pretty awesome way to kind of see where you are as a photographer. I wrote a really long post where I kind of broke down different stages of photographers that I see, you know, the absolute beginner and some of the mistakes that they do, some of the ways that you can tell just by looking at a photo what kind of stage that person's in, second, third, fourth, up to seven stages up to a professional photographer. And we'll just tell you kind of where we think you fit there. You can choose how blunt and honest you want it to be and how much you just want, you know, kind of a pat on the back, a general direction. You can kind of tell us what you're looking for and we'll do that for you. So please check it out, improvephotography.com. You can go to improvephotography.com/portfolio review or look for the button on the sidebar. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us on the Improved Photography Podcast. I also want to remind you about Tripod, our brand new podcast. It is on iTunes and we really would love your support. Please go into iTunes and download Tripod, our new podcast about landscape and wildlife photography. That does it for this week on Improved Photography, and we will see you in another 7 days.